I really just want somebody who's going to aggressively fight for me in court. Is that too much to ask?
Filing an eviction should not be complicated. There's got to be an easier way.
Nothing frustrates me more than having to wait for my attorney to call me back. I need them now.
What I really need from my law firm is someone who can provide my staff training so we actually can stay out of trouble.
When you have property management problems, we have your solutions. This is the Zona Law Group podcast with the experienced attorneys from Zona Law.
And welcome back to the Zona Law podcast. We're excited to have you here and excited to do another podcast to get all of the Zona clients up to date as to what's going on legally. I am one of the attorneys, Mark Zinman, joined here with Scott Balua.
Good to be here.
It's always a pleasure. And this, for the record, is actually the first time Scott Balua and I have done a podcast together. So this is exciting.
Yeah, every time it's always us doing it separate and somebody else interviewing us, but this is great.
So if it turns into a train wreck, don't blame me, blame Scott. That's the plan.
Nope. Leadership starts at the top.
That is not good. All right, so what we're going to try and do today is really hit a couple points that need to be addressed for our clients so they know what's coming, make it short, make it sweet, in and out, and so you can kind of get the information you want. So with that, we're going to talk on a couple different things. Supreme Court came out with a new ruling last night. Today, I think, is actually the 8th of July, is that right?
Yes.
All right, so Supreme Court came out with a new rule last night. We've got more things going on with the CARES Act when that's hopefully wrapping up at the end of this month, and we also got to start going over the rule that came out last week from Governor Ducey regarding pools and gyms. So, Scott Balua, attorney at law, where do you want to start?
Let's start with pools and gyms. That's probably the number one question that I'm getting from a lot of clients. They want to know, what exactly does the executive order mean for them? How are they supposed to comply with it? There's a lot of gray area there, but it's Executive Order 2020-43. It is the most recent executive order with regards to this to try to help mitigate some of the issues that we have with the spread of the coronavirus. Essentially, the question being asked by most of the property managers is, how do we comply with this? There's two different prongs that deal with swimming pools. One deals with accommodations in hotels, and then there's one that deals with the multifamily housing that has a slight variation on it. If it's a hotel, then there's actually a part of the provision that puts an onus on the hotel operator to ensure that there's compliance. However, it's a little bit different in the multifamily world in that there's a requirement to put up signage. You have to show that that there's signage up that complies with the CDC requirements of doing social distancing, and then no more than 10 groups of 10 people. The biggest problem with that is, how do you make a determination as to whether or not it's a group of 10 people, and isn't there any obligation as a property manager to enforce that regulation? Some communities have gigantic pools, some have really small pools. So is this a group of 10 for a smaller pool or a group of 10 for a larger pool as well?
That's the hardest, I think, that we're seeing more and more often, is that people are arguing, okay, well, it says 10. Does that mean that only 10 people can be in the entire pool area? Or does that mean you have like little groups of 10? But if you have little groups of 10, it really does create a control issue of how you do anything. I mean, an easier rule, obviously, is just the pool is too small or 10 is our number. But if you have a huge pool that regularly would fit 300, maybe 10 is too restrictive. But then you have this idea of like little different groups of people, like 10 people, and then the manager has to go out there and try and enforce that. I mean, it creates a huge burden for the management company to try and realistically guard for people's health and comply with those rules.
And that is the biggest issue, because if the apartment complex is going to have to spend all this money, time, and resources, they want to make sure that it's being done in a way that's going to help immunize them from liability if anything should end up happening, as well as being in compliance with the governor's orders. So that's the tricky gray area.
But gyms closed, right? Gyms?
Correct.
Cleared.
That's one of the issues here, is that the gyms are a pretty simple thing to resolve, is that they have signs up closing those facilities. Recently, there was a case filed by Mountainside Fitness that tried to challenge the closing of the facility, of the gym facility. Ultimately, yesterday, there was a decision that came out by the Maricopa County Superior Court that said that, well, no, the governor's order that caused the gyms to close is legitimate and it needs to be closed. But there are some slight variations on that issue that maybe you can help clarify for us.
Yeah, and I think it's important for property managers, because we've always said it's questionable the enforceability of like the CARES Act as being constitutional, or the executive order as being constitutional, basically allowing tenants to live in properties for free at some point. And so I think a lot of managers started questioning me when Mountainside lost how that affects landlords' rights. And it's really different. The Mountainside ruling was whether or not the governor was reasonable in making the determination. The governor in these types of pandemics has wide sort of power in terms, as long as they're acting reasonable, they're fine. Our arguments always have been in terms of the landlord-tenant side of allowing tenants to live for free, for example, under the CARES Act, and you can't evict them. That's what's called an unconstitutional taking. That's a different legal argument. So I don't think Mountainside's lawsuit really affects landlords' rights on that if they wanted to pursue it. But it does mean very clearly that property managers that have gyms on property, they have to be closed. There's really no wiggle room there.
Oh, I agree. And then, so what do you say to those tenants that come up and say, well, I want to use the gym or I want to use the pool, but it looks like there's a lot of people there? How do you respond to that?
I think that you have to control the numbers. I mean, the gym should be closed, and that's just not an amenity that's available because of what the governor's done. They just simply say, it doesn't exist. The pool, it's really how they can manage it. I mean, they have to comply with the governor's orders. They want to only have groups of 10. And if at the same time, the management has to be able to not waste all their resources just ensuring there's only 10 people at the pool. So they can close it at certain times and limit really what used to be an open amenity from before.
So another issue that we've had come up as well is let's say that somebody, a resident, comes to you and they want to use the gym and they have a note from a doctor saying that there's a requirement for them to do so. How would you address that?
You're going to the question of is it a reasonable accommodation to use the gym when the gym's closed? I don't think so. I mean, you've got a law out there through the executive order saying that they have to be closed. I don't think a fair housing argument is going to trump that and through a reasonable accommodation. For fair housing purposes, you still want to have the dialogue with them, obviously, that interactive process. You have the discussion. But, man, you're opening yourself up to a huge liability if you start letting people in that gym.
Right. And there's also liabilities that exist, regardless of what path you choose in terms of the enforcement of the pool requirements. If you're a property manager and you walk by and you see that there's clearly an excess, then what do you do in that circumstance? Well, one of the things that we've been recommending is that even though there's not an affirmative duty to enforce it, you can still serve noncompliance notices and potentially contact the appropriate authorities if they aren't complying with the governor's orders with regards to when you're out in public, there are certain requirements of individuals.
Yeah, and that's what, I mean, honestly, we talk about it a lot at the office, obviously, between the attorneys. The way these things always come out is we see the laws, we see the executive orders, and we as the attorneys generally sit around our conference table and discuss it. We understand a lot of these things are just hard for managers. Like, I'm truly, on a personal level, like, I'm sympathetic. I feel bad if you're the manager that has to go out and say, look, there's 20 people in this pool that are meant for 10. You can't do that. And so, like, I understand a lot of the practical aspects of these laws are really hard for the managers to comply with, but that's the way they are. So let's jump on number two then, the CARES Act. We are hopefully coming up to the end of the CARES Act on July 25th. That's what everybody's been talking about, right? It ends the 25th. Does everything go back to normal?
Well, yes and no. There's, just like with anything in the law, there's a gray area there that we have to deal with. The CARES Act isn't a light switch. It doesn't turn off. Well, on the 26th of July, you can immediately start filing evictions or serving the appropriate notices. There's also a provision in the CARES Act that said that there's this 30-day window that you have to provide additional notice. So can you serve a five-day notice on the 26th for non-payment of rent and then immediately move forward with eviction? No, you can't. There's an additional provision that allows another 30 days.
Yeah, so just to be entirely clear, we had done a podcast, I think it was myself and Matt Kogelmeyer at that time, talking about these three different options, right? One was your five-day becomes a 30-day. Your other one was you serve the five-day, but you wait till the writ until after 30 days. And the third option was just go crazy and just file your case and assume that the CARES Act doesn't apply. Since we came out with that podcast, which I think was 2 weeks ago, the justice courts that hear most of the evictions in the counties and state came out with their own opinion saying the only option is really number one, which is you convert your 5 days to a 30-day under the CARES Act, and after 30 days, you can file your eviction. And the justice courts, at least here in Maricopa County, they're actually going to be checking to make sure that if it's a CARES Act property, you gave a 30-day notice then. And so come July 26th, what is the right move?
Well, then the appropriate move then in that circumstance is, of course, to serve that 30-day notice that incorporates the appropriate language under the Arizona Landlord-Tenant Act that says, well, you have this period of time to cure. If you don't cure it within that period of time, then an eviction could end up being filed.
So clients won't be filing evictions until the end of August on the, at least those ones that are subject to CARES.
At the very earliest, that's when we would have the ability to move forward and not potentially subject yourself to, you know, sanctions for violating a federal law.
Yeah. And I think an important thing to that has to be reiterated, we've talked about it here on the podcast before, is that clients don't want to file evictions, right?
Right.
Landlords are not in the business of filing evictions. The delinquency, the what happens when they vacate, the damages that they have to turn, it costs them several thousand dollars every time a tenant moves out. So the hope, I'm guessing, under this new converted 5-day to 30-day is that the tenants come, they work out payment plans, they enter into an arrangements.
I'm sure that's the intent, and we've already had quite a few calls, even before we started having that discussion about the 30 days, about what kind of payment plans can we put people on now to be proactive, even if they're not subject to CARES. So we do have a very positive response from landlords trying to help engage in that process, even without the existence of the federal laws or the governor's orders.
Yeah, and so it's for those people that don't know as well as the property managers, there's a lot of money in the state of Arizona that is available through different sources, community action agencies, and government funds, as well as on the state level, to provide to residents. And as the moratoriums hopefully fall off, more and more tenants will go out and get that information. The standards for those have also dropped, so it makes it easier for tenants to qualify, to get the information, to get the money, and then hopefully pay the rent. I mean,
and one of the problems with the programs, and some of us may have heard about the news that the difficulty that tenants are having trying to get those funds is there are proposals out there to try to make it easier and then to engage the landlord in that process as well. Because if the landlord can help assist the tenants on filing on their behalf and trying to collect that money, that would also help resolve some of the issues that we have with trying to get the funds distributed properly and in a timely manner so that we don't get to the eviction.
Yeah, there's been tons of managers have asked me saying, hey, can I just go apply for my tenant and then get the money? I'm like, that would honestly be a perfect world if the landlord could apply, the money comes on behalf of the tenant and just pays the rent. All the problems would be solved, but that's not how it works. And I'm not in government, so I don't get to make those decisions.
Yep, me neither. Other people.
So the CARES Act, like I said, it ends theoretically on the 25th of July, and then you can start serving your notices after that point. We don't know yet whether CARES is going to get extended or whether there's going to be a new law coming out. Do you have any thoughts?
That is one of the biggest questions that we have right now, because if it gets extended, then, well, everything that we've been doing so far will get extended as well, and we'll have to have those same processes in place. It's also possible that the executive order extending the moratorium with regards to the service of writs of restitution, that could get extended by the governor as well. I'm sure everybody's aware that the number of cases being, found out about the coronavirus have been spiking, and that may have an impact on whether or not the executive order gets extended beyond the end of July.
Yeah, and I know Governor Ducey is obviously under a lot of pressure for that reason. I know, they, especially at least on the executive order, they've been talking to both sides, tenant advocate, landlord advocates as well, to try and really gather the information of what the effect of the executive order is regarding delaying writs. We spoke to their office as well, I did, in terms of explaining that this is really harmful to landlords because it allows some tenants just to sit there and not pay rent for months.
Right.
And the moratorium under the CARES Act is even worse. A quick clarification as well. The CARES Act, it actually goes through the end of this year. It's only just the moratorium piece of it that expires on July 25th. And so it's important. I don't know if significantly practically it makes a difference for property managers that the rest of it continues, but it's really only the moratorium that ends. CARES Act continues.
Correct. Yes. That period of time in which there's different rules on non-payment of rent notices, but nothing changes with regards to the service for immediates and for non-compliances. Those can still proceed as normal, and we don't anticipate any changes with that if it is extended.
Yeah. And a last note, the CARES Act, when they threw in the part of the eviction moratorium, came in at the last minute back in March. So it literally could be up to the last minute on July 25th before we know exactly what's going to happen.
Right.
Though on the executive order, theoretically, I think Ducey is having another press conference tomorrow, which would be Thursday, I believe, to check
Correct.
Where they are with everything going on. Our final third topic for the day is Supreme Court came out with another rule last night. Supreme Courts generally don't come out with that many rules in a given year. Now I know last night's one was 2020-105, which is
that's amazing. That's a lot of work that the Supreme Court's been putting in and trying to stay on top of this issue.
So this one dealt with evictions. What does it say?
Well, we've got several different provisions in there associated with the Supreme Court administrative order. One of those issues is that from now on, the plaintiff is required to place in the complaint an attestation that they are not subject to the moratorium under the CARES Act, that it's not a property that is being affected by that. Now, there's a little bit of a problem with the language that they put into the administrative order, that it creates a kind of a problem that if you are subject to CARES, does that mean that you cannot file an eviction because you're required to have that language in the complaint? And
well, yeah, we know that's not true, though. It's not right. What their intent was. They just kind of wrote it very weird. So we have already changed our complaint to come into compliance with the rules from last night. It doesn't affect the property managers in terms of what we put in our complaint, obviously, but we've already started and have been through this time is every time we get an eviction in, we have to check with the client to know whether or not they fall under the CARES Act. We're also checking independent websites to confirm. I mean, what else can we do?
It's important for us to do that check on the front end. I mean, sometimes it's possible that a property manager that's on site might not have that information. So it's important to do the check in both places just to make sure that we're complying with the federal rules as well as the most recent administrative orders.
Yeah. So if you're a property manager watching and you send an eviction to us and we send you a request back saying, hey, are you complying with CARES or are you falling under CARES? That's why. The Supreme Court is mandating us do it. We're going to be asking, we're having our clients actually fill out forms confirming it, and then we're doing our own independent research just to make sure that every file that we send out of our office, we want it to be as clean as possible. We want it done properly. We want to comply with the rules. I mean, these are serious lawsuits that actually affect people's lives, and it's important we take them seriously.
Absolutely. And the on-site managers should be aware that if an eviction gets filed and it gets set for trial and you have to come in and testify under oath, then you're going to have to testify about whether or not, because the judges have taken to starting to ask those questions of the individual attorneys, and they ask them of the property managers when they come in.
Yeah. And I think from our job as zonal law attorneys is really helping. The more we can work with the managers on the front side, get that information, put it into the complaint, be compliant, it actually makes everything else after that easier, right?
Oh, it makes it so much smoother to be able to walk into court. You have every document that you need completely in order, and then everybody's on the same page. But if there's gaps or if there's pieces missing, then, of course, it's an uphill battle, and then it gives the tenants an opportunity to potentially, you know, get out of a case. Not that that happens all that often, but...
Yeah. And so the other thing that came out of the Supreme Court from last night is the idea of a consent order. And we're not going to dwell too far into it because this is really the tip of the iceberg of potential things to come. But the Supreme Court came out with the idea of a consent order, and they actually gave a form for it and suggested that landlords and their attorneys be willing to work with tenants and enter in a consent order at court. It conditionally dismisses the case and it gives the tenant a certain amount to pay. And if the tenant pays, the case gets fully dismissed. If the tenant doesn't pay, then a judgment enters later. And so this is uncharted waters, really, from an Arizona standpoint. It's never been done.
And just so everybody understands, like, procedurally how this kind of affects everything, you know, in the past, when the attorneys were able to go to court, then we would have conversations with the tenants that would show up, and then we would have them essentially sign off on something very similar, where they were agreeing that the rent was paid, that they were agreeing that a judgment would
the
be...
The rent was not paid.
The rent was not paid, and that's correct.
Yeah. I do not know what I'm doing then.
Yes, the rent was not paid. And then they're agreeing to the entry of the judgment against them, and they understand that they have a period of time in which to leave. This is more of like a hybrid of that because at this point, all of the appearances have been telephonic, so we can't have that conversation with the tenants, which puts us at a bit of a disadvantage, mostly because we're not able to have that conversation with the tenants so that they understand what the process is, which is actually one of the functions of our job.
Yeah, and this is voluntary what the Supreme Court is putting out in terms of the consent, and we're going to have to wait and see how that actually plays out. But it's just a good thing for managers to keep in the back of their mind is that the courts are, across the board, going to try and do things to decrease the number of evictions or decrease the process of judgments being entered. And this is just kind of the tip of the iceberg of potential ideas that they're looking at.
And especially right now, because there is news out there that there's going to be some type of expected wave of evictions that happens after the moratorium ends. This is one of the things that can be thrown out there to try to help cure that issue.
Yeah, and that's an excellent point. And I think it's actually probably a good point to wrap up on, though. There is so much news pressed on this idea that there's an eviction cliff coming. And I will tell you personally, obviously, we are in the thick of it. I truly don't believe that that will happen.
Right.
If you look at the historical numbers, the lowest number of evictions we've had as a state was in 2009, 2010, in the middle of the recession. And the reason that kind of surprised a lot of people, but the reason the evictions dropped at that point was because all the landlords said, if I lose a tenant, I'm not going to be able to replace them with another tenant. And so right. They were doing partial payment agreements, doing whatever they can to keep the tenants they had. And so the eviction numbers obviously went down at that point. And I think the same thing is here. Is come July, come August, come September, there's not going to be this huge flood because every landlord's realizing, okay, we've got a problem. We're better off keeping a tenant on a payment plan than filing an eviction for a delinquency.
Just like in business, it's cheaper to keep an existing customer than it is to bring in a new customer. The costs associated with bringing somebody back into the fold, bringing somebody back into the apartment, that's more expensive than finding a way to work with tenants.
Yeah, and so I firmly believe that eviction cliff will not happen as a result of that. But we can obviously come back and update on that. I have a feeling with Governor Ducey talking, I think tomorrow, we're going to come back pretty soon here, and then we'll see with the CARES Act as well.
Great.
Anything else?
I think that's everything.
All right. You guys, thank you so much for joining us on the Zone of Law podcast. As always, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you as well.